You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
How is it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves with John Scott. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Tim is back. We missed Friday. Tim was out and about going on planes, trains, and automobiles. Where were you, Tim? Let everybody know.
I was back home in Boston area for a wedding. My college roommate. It was really nice. Was up in Gloucester, which is a north shore of Boston, right in the water. Have you seen The Perfect Storm, John, that movie?
Yes.
Back in the day. So that's where it was filmed. It's like a fishing, shipping town right in the water. And the hotel is actually right on the water too. So it was like, it's kind of like, I get out there and everywhere you look, there's lobster traps and cranes and dudes and walking around with gear and all kinds of stuff. And I was like, it smelled like fish. It was dark and cloudy out. And I was like, if I had never been to Massachusetts before, this is my first time, I would think, yeah, this is about right. This seems exactly right. But it was a good time. It was a good time to see the friends and family and all that. How was your weekend?
It was all right. I don't know. It's just it was good. It was good. Yeah, we laid low. It's Advent season for us. We're Catholics, so we kind of did some stuff at church. We had a little carol thing at church where we sang some songs. That was fun. And my daughter, it's her birthday today, actually. So she was all geared up. Gabriella. Yes. She turns 8 today. So she was all fired up this weekend about what we're going to have for dinner, what we're going to do, what kind of cake are you going to make me? What's going on in the morning? Cause we always do a big breakfast table extravaganza. And it was just a whole lot of stuff. Then I had my hockey game Sunday night. So I threw a wrench and everything, but it was good. It was a good weekend, but they go by fast. Hold on, I need a sip of coffee here.
They do go by fast. It's always funny too, like going home to Boston and all of a sudden you hear all these accents that I've never heard in my whole life. And people like my aunt, my mom and friends and stuff, you know, not being around it every day anymore. And they don't have strong accents, but a little bit where she's like, oh, you're moving to Charlotte. Oh, that'll be fun. Like I'll have to come out and visit you this summer. And I'm like, who are you? I've known you my whole life. I've never heard your accent till today, but it's just
so funny. Yeah. When I go home, I hear the A's and the oots and the boots. And I'm like, did I used to speak that way? Did I used to sound like you? I hope I didn't, but maybe
I still do sometimes. Once in a while, I'll hear like through oot.
Once I have a couple beers, it comes back a little bit, but you mentioned the move. You're leaving Traverse City, Tim.
Yeah. It's crazy. Saturday and Sunday, I'm driving home to Boston for the holidays, and then I'm moving to North Carolina in Charlotte, which is exciting. It's bittersweet. I love here in Traverse City. It's been 3 years, but moving on to the next thing. But it's crazy because, like, you forget how busy and hectic the move is. Not just packing your stuff and all that, but like all the logistical stuff, like the subscription you got to cancel and the addresses you got to update and all these things. And my whole life the last week and this whole week was moving stuff into a storage unit, moving stuff, getting rid of stuff, donating stuff, selling stuff. My apartment's all in boxes right now. It's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, we moved a year ago last month and we still have packages shipped to our old house. And the people who live there must just think we're the most irresponsible people, because you have like, you got Amazon, you got all these other places and you just click ship and it's like, oh, it's shipping to my old house and you got to do the walk of shame up the drive. I'm like, sorry, it won't happen again. I'm like, it's going to happen again. Let's move on. What's that? I'll see you next week. It's just brutal. You know, what's not brutal. A team, you know, we've been down on them, rightfully so. They've struggled the last few years, but they a breath of fresh air. We were talking before we came on. I was like, this team, I don't know. They could have, you know, a chance because they play out west or in the Pacific Division. I know the Pacific is, you know, just as good as the other divisions, as one of our listeners said. And I say that mockingly because I don't believe it. The Vancouver Canucks, not so quietly, have won 4 in a row under Bruce Boudreau. They've been playing very good hockey. And it's not like they're playing teams that are cakewalks. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1. Carolina, arguably the best team in the NHL. They beat the Winnipeg Jets 4-3. Winnipeg, very good team. They beat the Boston Bruins 2-1. Boston, other than that Vancouver game, had a pretty good road swing. Then they beat the LA Kings, division rival, 4-0 in Boudreaux's first game. So that's being said, is there any chance in hell that Vancouver can slide into the playoffs? Right now, as it stands today, they are 6 points out of a playoff spot. Vegas has 2 games in hand. There's still 50 games left to play, Tim. There's a lot of games to be played. Is there any chance that Vancouver can get back in this thing? Because before we came on there, you're like, ah, no, they're done. Are you going to backtrack that statement?
You know what? I am. I'm looking at the map now. They've won 4 in a row. And Edmonton, by contrast, has lost 5 in a row. They're only 6 points apart. Like, they had a terrible start to the season, but the math is still so early enough where they got 26 points. The fourth place team is 32. You know what I mean? Like, it is not that unlikely. The problem is, who's the odd man out? Because you got Anaheim leading the division. They're looking like they're not going anywhere. Calgary, Edmonton, and Vegas are all teams we expect to be there. So which one of them would be the odd man out? That's hard to say.
I think this division is exactly what I said it was a month ago. It's going to be a season of streaks. Any one of these teams could go on an 8-game winning streak or an 8-game losing streak. And we've seen it already. San Jose got hot. They won 5 in a row. It's very exciting. Oh, then they lose 7. Oh, LA's right up there. They were in first place. If you don't remember, about a month ago, they were first place in the Pacific. It was LA and Anaheim. They were hot. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Well, LA's lost like the last 8 of 10. They're not doing so hot. Oh, now Edmonton, no one's going to catch Edmonton. I was on the Edmonton bandwagon. They might only lose 5 games all season. Oh, well, what's that? They've lost 5 in a row and they're struggling. And maybe they're not the team we think they are. This division is going to be a hot and cold division. Who's hot? Who's going to maintain that hot streak? Right now, Anaheim has been the only consistent team, really. And Calgary, I'll give them that. Calgary hasn't gone on a big losing streak yet. If you can manage to stem the tide of a losing streak, that's what our coaches would always harp on. It's okay to lose one. It's okay to lose two. You never lose 3 in a row. You got to stop that. Nip it in the bud right away. You never, never, never want to go on a losing streak because it just piles on itself. And it just, the despair washes over you. Like, we're never going to win. We're never going to win. And then it just becomes embarrassing. And next thing you know, you're Edmonton, where you're a very good team, and you've lost 5 in a row. Then you start to panic. And it's like, wait a minute, what's going on? We're supposed to be a Stanley Cup contender. Why haven't we won in a long time? Then you start squeezing the stick a little bit. The goaltenders, maybe the puck looks a little bit smaller and they can't stop it. It's a big mental game at that point. So you really have to work at not losing that many games in a row. And the good teams, the very, very good teams, very rare do you see them lose 3 games in a row in a season. The Pacific Division is not like that. There are no really good teams in the Pacific Division. We thought the Vegas Golden Knights were going to be that team in the division to maybe vie for a Stanley Cup. It has not happened yet. Going back to the Vancouver Canucks, I totally see them making a run for the playoffs at this point. They're not going to be a Stanley Cup contender. The reason I see that is Bruce Boudreau comes in. Everyone wants to play good for the new coach, make a good first impression. You know, they're doing things they don't normally do. Pedersen's been playing well. Besser's been buzzing around the ice. They've been doing it. OEL didn't play last game. Pullman's or Hominick was out. So they're still having pieces come in, but everybody's playing better. Everybody's playing up to the contracts for the first 4 games. And Boudreau's letting them go. He's letting the defenseman jump up in the rush. He's letting him be active. And when you have that decor that they have with the Hughes and the Myers and the OELs and the guys who can jump up in the rush, that's what they're there for. You got the horses, let them run, baby. Like, I don't know why Travis Green didn't let them, you know, play like that. He kind of held him back a little bit. Maybe he was worried about getting embarrassed, worried about the run and gun game. He was a little more conservative style of coach. And Bruce Boudreau, he's letting him go at this point in the season. He's still holding everybody accountable. If you make a mistake, he's going to let you know. That's what everybody's saying after the games. You know, he'll let you know on film if you're making a mistake, but he's going to give you a little bit of rope. You know, the early results are great. 4-0. Are they better than LA? Yeah. Are they better than San Jose? I think so. They're it's not that far-fetched for them to make a run at the playoffs. If their players continue to play the way that they are, and mind you, we see this whenever there's a new coach, they get that bump. Oh, a new coach. Let's do it. You know, I want to maintain my ice time. I want to keep my position on the first line. I gotta perform. Then your old habits kick in. Then 2 weeks go by. It's like, oh, you know what? Maybe I'm going to go revert back to who I was. We'll see if that, you know, happens. But as of now, I'm not ready to go all in. I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid yet because Pettersson is still Pettersson in my book. But they have good players on the Vancouver Canucks. They have elite players on the Vancouver Canucks. And don't look now, but Thatcher Demko is turning himself into a really, really good goaltender. When Jim Benning let Jacob Markstrom walk and he let him go to Calgary, I was scratching my head a little bit. I was like, it's a bold move. Markstrom is a very good goaltender. And I don't think it would cost a lot of money to keep him. It's looking like a pretty good move right now. As good as Markstrom has been, Demko's just as good. He's been having a really good season. Not Vezina type numbers as Markstrom's getting, because Markstrom plays for a Daryl Sutter defense where, you know, it's just clog up the house. Don't let any shots through. We're going to get a million shutouts in a season, but he's playing really, really good hockey. So we'll see where it goes from here. I was shocked to see that they're only 6 points back. I expect them to be double digits. I was like, Vancouver sucked all season. How are they only 6 points back after only winning four in a row? Then I went, oh, they play in the Pacific Division. That's why. So for everybody who's like, the Pacific is great, it's still the worst division in the NHL. Maybe, well, the Central's pretty bad too.
Let me ask you this. If you had to guess right now, who are the four teams in the Pacific that make the playoffs?
As it stands right now, I think there's only a couple. Gosh, the three locks for me are Calgary, Edmonton, and Vegas. Those are my three locks.
Still not a lock for you?
No, they're not.
They're first in the division.
As long as Isaac Lundstrom can stay healthy, then they're fine. But they're first in the division. Yes, they've been playing good all season long. I just don't trust them yet. I really don't. They got John Gibson. There's a lot.
Most games played too.
They have by a couple, but I'm not sold on them yet. Calgary looks good. Edmonton, they're going to be there. They're too talented not to be there. And for some reason, I just can't. I can't omit Vegas. Like they've been so good the last 3, 4, 5 years, but maybe Vegas is the odd one out because Anaheim's looked pretty darn good. Or maybe it's just the four that are in there or the four that are in there. I'm trying to find a way to get Vancouver into the playoffs, but it would not surprise me if those four teams that are in there right now, Anaheim, Calgary, Edmonton, and Vegas, are the four that go to the dance at the end of the day. That's a pretty good four, but none of them are going to win the Stanley Cup. Out of those four, Tim, which one has the best chance to win the Stanley Cup? Anaheim, Calgary, Edmonton, or Vegas?
I would say Vegas or Calgary.
I would say Calgary. Yeah. I definitely would say Calgary. They got good defensemen. They got a good goaltender. They're strong down the middle, like I always say. I'm not just saying that. I don't say things just to say them. I actually mean that. All right, but Bucherberg, good for him. Very, you know, it's people ripped on the hiring a little bit, and I question it. I was like, oh, you know, same, you know, old dog, new trick. He's been around. Like, let's get some fresh blood in there. Who knows? Maybe I was wrong. Maybe the guy knows what he's doing. He's been a coach for a long time. He's obviously resonating with the players. He's doing something right. You don't just go in and take over a team that's last place and just playing like garbage and turn them around overnight and do fool. He must know what he's doing. So good for Bruce Boudreau. Good for the Vancouver Canucks. It gives them something, you know, to feel good about. So that's good. Moving on to the Olympics are around the corner. There's been some talk about the NHL players not actually going to the Olympics. Have you heard of this? There's been some chatter.
Yep.
So the latest news is the Chinese IOC, I don't know if it's China or if it's the IOC or if it's a combination of the two, they have some crazy protocol stuff if you do contract COVID-19 while you're at the Olympics, where potentially you would have to quarantine for 21 days, which is insane. So this puts a really big wrench in the NHL players' plans to go to China, to go to Beijing for the 2022 Olympics. Because if you do go to the Olympics and you are a Connor McDavid and you do somehow get COVID. There are breakthrough cases, things happen. Who knows? And you have to quarantine in China for 21 days. That's a big deal. And there's already deals in place with the PA and the CBA and the NHL. You're not getting paid for those days that you're in quarantine in China. So there's a huge question mark. I know the IOC or the IIHF, the International Hockey Federation, they put aside a small insurance lump sum of $6 million or $3 million, whatever the number is. That number gets eaten up if Connor McDavid's over there for like five games. The guy makes $1 million a game. He's like, gets maybe not $1 million a game. He gets paid a lot. That money won't last long. If that doesn't change, just say that ordinance. You are the GM, Tim. You're the GM of the Edmonton Oilers. You have a lot of players potentially going to the Olympics. You're the GM of the Chicago Blackhawks. You're the GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Do you let your players go to the Olympics if there is a possibility that they could be stuck in China for 3 weeks?
I mean, at this point, yes, only because there's a strong chance they don't go anyway, and you don't have to be the bad guy. Whether there's a United States or Canadian government boycott of the Olympics, or then maybe the league steps in and says, we don't want our players going. Or maybe the players, like Robin Lehner, say, you know what? You guys, good luck to the rest of my guys, but I'm not going to make this one for my personal reasons. So there's a chance that these guys don't go for any number of reasons, whether it's hockey related or, you know, geopolitical related. But when it comes down to it, and say it's crunch time and it looks like everyone's going, I still think, yes, even at that point, you let them go. I think it's just, I don't know how you don't, you know?
It's Gary Bettman. He has just thrown everything on the players. He has basically just said, whatever they want to do, we're going to do. He has taken all culpability out of his hands. I love what he's done. He said, I'm not the bad guy. It's the player's decision. If they want to go, they go. It's a genius strategy for him. It's a PR nightmare for the NHLPA because he has no, there's nothing on him. So if they go over there and they're done for 21 days, Gary's like, I told you. Like, it was your decision. I let you guys know what could have happened, and look at what's happening. It's affecting our whole season. So I don't know. It's such a tricky thing where there's a lot of moving parts. What if only a couple of guys are in COVID protocol? It only affects the New York Rangers, and Panarin and Zibanejad are gone. And then all of a sudden the Rangers, they're without their two best players for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It's like, whoa, so what? Rangers, you know, suck it. You're going to be terrible for the next couple of weeks. It's definitely, I do think they'll go at the end of the day, and maybe they switch the quarantine for the NHL players because obviously they have a high impact job other than like a bobsledder. You know, they can maybe afford to quarantine for 3 weeks other than an NHL guy who has stuff going on back home, but we'll see. It's China doesn't seem to be very flexible. To me, I feel like they're going to be like, no, we're three-week quarantine. Sorry. And I don't want to get into geopolitical stuff, but I would not want to quarantine in China ever, let alone 3 weeks with my family. I'm not bringing my family to China if I'm on that team. No thanks. You can watch it on. If the NHL players don't go, did you watch the games 4 years ago when there was no NHL players?
No. Highlights, no, but no.
I didn't watch any of the games. No. Do you watch the games if they go now?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
If the NHL players don't go, are you watching?
Well, who goes then?
Last time it was college guys. It was players who were overseas. It was everybody but NHL players.
No, I don't. I mean, if U.S. goes to the gold medal or something, yeah, but no.
All right. Speaking of the Olympics, speaking of the U.S., there's been a little bit of chatter of a certain Jack Eichel. As the Jack turns his back, there's been some chatter that he is, you know, had the surgery. All signs that I've heard, it was successful. He is slowly building up his stamina, doing light exercises. His date for recovery post-surgery coincides with the start of the Olympics. Is there any way possible? Any way possible, if you're the US GM of, I don't know who it is, constructing the Team USA team. I know I'm posing you a lot of difficult questions, Tim. I know you didn't expect this to be this type of podcast, but I am. Do you take a Jack Eichel who has not played in a competitive game for over a year now and put him right on the Olympic team if he's healthy?
Well, do I talk to Jack all along? I'm assuming I get to have those conversations, right?
I'm assuming you can talk to Jack. Yes.
Yeah,
this isn't I'll let that go.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you want, I mean, first of all, he's going to have an edge. He's going to have something to prove. He's going to be hungry. And I think he's going to want to show it on the biggest stage, which is the Olympics, obviously. Maybe prove all of those doubters and naysayers wrong. And I think obviously he's maybe not a number one, but certainly arguably number two, best player, most talented player on that team. And I think for a team that is looking for an offense first player, I mean, you're going to need the Jack Eichels of the world to beat Canada, I think. So I don't know. I would say yes.
I think I would bring him too. What's the worst that can happen? You just bench him or you throw him in the reserves, the press box, and let him just watch and just let him skate. Maybe he shows up for game four or five. Let him play against Team China. He is in the same group as China. So I'm assuming Jack Eichel can compete against, let him get a game versus Team China. Let him score seven goals, get his confidence back. Ugh. What's the over under? You're the points bet guy. Another question. Team Canada plays Team China, game one. What is the over under for goals in that game?
I mean, the actual number will be different from what's possible because they'll be able to pretty much score at will, right?
What is the Vegas going to set their line at? 12 and a half?
I was going to say, I bet Canada doesn't let it go into double digits.
They're going to.
You don't think they'll hold back?
No. No way. Because goal differential is a thing in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So if they tie USA for first spot, it goes to goal differential. That's the first tiebreaker.
Oh, man. 11 and a half.
No, sure. They're Americans and Canadians who have been repatriated to be Chinese citizens, but they're just that I would watch that game. If I do watch a game, it'll be that game because it's just going to be a bloodbath. All right, Eichel's going to the Olympics. We've already gotten through that. Doug Armstrong, the GM of the Olympic team for Canada, made an interesting comment. Usually when you construct a team, typically everyone thinks you just go for the most talented guys. You take, okay, Team Canada, let's see who's got the most points. Ding, 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 ding. Let's take all these guys. Away we go. We're going to win. We got all the talented guys. We got all the all-stars. We got all the all-pros. It's an easy sell. Doug Armstrong, he made a little waves in Canada. I'm an insider in Canada. You're not Canadian, Tim, so just leave Canada alone to me. He made a comment. He said, we're assembling a team for an NHL-style game, for an NHL-style ice size, which is what they're playing on in China. What did he mean by that? An NHL-style game. Is he just going to select all the skill players? I don't think so. I think we're going to be surprised by a couple of the selections that Doug Armstrong unveils when he does unveil Team Canada to the world, because it's always a big day. It's like in high school when you try out for the play and you go up to the wall. It's like, did I get the lead? I was never. I don't know why I'm saying that. I never did that, but it's always exciting. Who are, Tim, some guys that maybe we weren't thinking of that could be added to this list of players going overseas because Doug Armstrong thinks they fit in an NHL-style rink for an NHL-style type of game?
Well, it depends on exactly what he means by that because, you know, even an NHL-style game, the team that you build for best of seven deep playoff run style tournament is different from a short high speed Olympic tournament. But one of the names being thrown around is Tom Wilson, who's having a great offensive season. He's got 24 points in 27 games. You know, he brings the size, the grit, he puts a little bit of fear in his opponents. And I don't know how many guys that are Olympic or even close to Olympic caliber level will be on it. You know, on any team where I don't know that Team USA has an answer to him. I mean, I'm sure a guy like Brady Tkachuk or someone wouldn't be afraid to tussle, but Brady Tkachuk's not stopping Tom Wilson from doing what he does. So I don't know that anyone else will have a match for that. So I think there's an edge there, especially if you look at Armstrong's comments. So he's kind of the name that I go right to.
How nervous are you if you're Team Russia or Team USA and you're one of the skill guys? You're like, no. They're getting Tom Wilson. They're picking him. It's just, man, like, this was Yeah. Like Panarin is just like, this was supposed to be the Olympics. We don't hit in the Olympics. This is like, I'll show you guys. And then you see Tom Wilson step over the boards and like, oh no, this is not good. It's like Adam Sandler in Dodgeball when Billy Madison, you're all going to die. And he starts pelting the kids. It's going to be Tom Wilson at the Olympics. He's just going to be ripping everybody apart. I hope he goes. I didn't even think of Tom Wilson. I was like, well, you know, we'll maybe get some names I heard thrown around were like a Casey Cizikas, who's a good fourth line guy. He can block shots, kill penalties, kind of does everything. He's really proven his role the last two playoff runs for the New York Islanders. He's really played well. Another guy, Yanni Gourde, who was just hard to play against. He's won a couple Stanley Cups. He's a proven winner. Doug Armstrong also emphasized he wants winners. He wants guys who know what it takes to win. And he's obviously won a couple Stanley Cups. Guys like that, who I thought maybe would be put on the team, but a Tom Wilson would be fantastic. I think he could go up and down the lineup, much like a Yanni Gourde could. But another name that is also exciting is Zach Hyman. We did talk about Hyman at the beginning of this season because Team Canada likes to keep teammates together. They like that familiarity on the forward side of things. And on the back end, I guess you could keep Jones and Werenski. We're in Columbus together. But is there a chance for Hyman? Because he has been doing okay with McDavid, or you could even slot him in. Who do you play with in Toronto? I guess mostly Matthews, but so that doesn't make sense. But out of those four, Wilson, Hyman, Cizikas, Yanni Gourde, which one fits? Which one is even going to get any playing time? Because Canadiens' roster is so deep.
It's got to be Wilson, I think, is the one. I mean, he's the one I said too. But if you look at like your comments about not just, you know, NHL type of roster, but winners, and then you look at, okay, if we bring someone like a Tom Wilson in, and that, he might not necessarily be a starter every game, but who is the odd man out when he comes out? Because you know you've got our locks. You know McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby, Bergeron, Marchand, those are probably the five locks. And then it's like, is Mitch Marner out now for Tom Wilson? Is Stamkos out for a Yanni Gourde or something like that? Braden Point hasn't had as strong of a season, although he's got all the talent in the world. Like someone has to be out for these guys, one of these type of guys to come in. So it's really interesting to see how that plays out. And I also don't want to undersell the fact that when you and I built our teams prior to the season, both of us had a fourth line already that, you know, elite talents, but we're the grinders of this crew of the Mark Stones, Ryan O'Reilly, Sean Couturier. So I don't want to overlook the fact that we do kind of have that type of player already. They're not big and scary like Tom Wilson, but they're a shutdown, gritty two-way player that maybe Zach Hyman is. So I don't think that, you know, that it does exist in this roster already a little bit.
Yeah, I think, gosh, I think if you look at Armstrong's comments and you read into it a little more, does he value a Stanley Cup champion, a guy like a Yanni Gourde or a Tom Wilson, over a guy who's maybe a little bit better, like a Sean Couturier? I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think we're going to be surprised when the roster is revealed. I don't think Mitch Marner's on it anymore. I don't think Couturier's on it anymore. I think there's going to be a lot of guys who are just going to be left home scratching their head like, why am I not on this team? I think you're going to see guys, even an Anthony Cirelli from Tampa Bay. He is a good dude. Do you take Tampa Bay's line, Stamkos, Cirelli, and Yanni Gourde? And just that's your fourth line. They are very comfortable with each other. They know how to win. They've played in really hard minutes up and down the lineup. They're really, I don't know. There will be some surprises when that roster gets unveiled. It's going to be exciting, but you could talk about it all day, which we maybe should.
What? We should. Okay. Let me ask you one before we move on. On the defensive side, do you see any of that playing out? Like, how might you see more of a grittier or physical defenseman come play over like a Theodore or Petrangelo or something?
Well, that's where the Pelech Pulock comes in, right, for the Islanders. Do you take those guys who are a little more physical? They're a little more shut down. I like those two. They haven't been having the greatest season with the Islanders. Pulock's been hurt a little bit. That's where that comes into play. Do you take a more skilled player like a Dougie Hamilton, or do you take a guy who's maybe more, I'm doing air quotes, NHL style? Because obviously Dougie Hamilton is an NHL defenseman. So I don't know. Or do you bring in Drew Doughty, who's been there, done that. He's won gold medals. He's won Stanley Cups. He has that grit that you know what it takes to win games, which Doug Armstrong seems to prioritize. So we'll see. Doug Armstrong's an old school guy. He's not one of these new age guys as Sheldon Keefe to Kyle Dubas. He's an old school dude. He's going to bring a guy into a fight who's going to go in and punch someone in the face. He's not going to bring a guy who dances around.
Does Canada have any locks on defense, or is it wide open?
Well, I think Pietrangelo, they already said he's on the team.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's Pietrangelo, and I think another lock is Shea Theodore. I think those two guys, they're going to be there. And Kel McCarr, you have to bring him. Kel McCarr could potentially go down as the best defenseman who'd ever laced him up. If he continues this trajectory that he's on, the kid's unbelievable. Like did you see the goal he scored the other night, coast to coast?
It was oh yeah,
pretty dang good goal. So like this guy's a lock. Theodore, Pietrangelo. After that, I think it's up in the air. You got, if you want to go with partners, you take Devin Taves, put him with Kale McCarr. Colorado pairings. Then you got the Vegas pairings, Pietrangelo and Theodore. Then you got the Islanders pairings with Pulock and Pelich.
I don't think Theodore's a lock.
I don't. Yeah, you're right. He might not be. The only lock is Pietrangelo McCarr. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then it's like you got Drew Doughty, you got Parenko, you got Brent Burns, you got Dougie Hamilton. And I'm probably leaving out countless other guys who I had on my roster than my team before. So there will be a lot of debate once the team is released, and that'll be fun. Not so much debate on the US side because I don't think they have the pool to pull from, but it's always good fodder for us to talk about. It's power rankings time, Tim. Who's good? Who's bad? Who's a waste of space and who's just climbing up the standings? I have mine. And I think my first overall pick is going to surprise a lot of people. It's the Minnesota Wild. They are my number one. They're my number one honey right now. And I'm not being a favoritism. I'm not being a homer. Minnesota Wild are going to win the Stanley Cup this year. And I'll tell you why. They play the game the right way. They have the best defense in hockey. Can I say that? Can I say that their defense is so good that it just makes the offense so easy? Spurgeon, Dumba, they're playing great hockey. I know I'm leaving some out right now, but Kaprizov's playing out of this world. Marcus Foligno was just having an MVP-type season. We've already talked about him in episodes prior. I like myself some Minnesota Wild. And here is what's going to put them over the top. They have Kevin Fiala. And I know this is a stretch. Kevin Fiala's on. What are you smiling for?
Where are you going with this?
I'm gonna put some pieces together. I'm going off. Kevin Fiala, he's on the TSN trade bait. He's number eight that they cooked up. So he is an unrestricted or restricted free agent. He's 25 years old. Apparently, Minnesota Wild want to move him. He's having an okay year. He's got 3 goals, 15 assists. So it's not like he's not producing. They're going to trade Kevin Fiala to San Jose Sharks for Thomas Hertl. You heard it here first. That's what I think is going to happen. I think Fiala is going to San Jose. Hertl's going to go to Minnesota. He's going to sign a deal in Minnesota. Then they're going to have a very dangerous lineup. They're going to slot him in on the second line. Their third line is going to be Foligno, Greenway, and Erickson Ek. Then the second line is going to be Hertl and whoever. And the first line is going to be Kaprizov and Zuccarello. And they're going to be a very dangerous team. I don't have all those players' names in front of me, but that's the move that's going to happen. And they're already at the top of my rankings, Minnesota, because they've been playing so, so good. And they're going to go out and they're going to get Thomas Hertl and they're going to put him over the top. This is Minnesota's year to win the Stanley Cup. I truly believe that. They're a very good team. They're coached very well. And Kirill Kaprizov has turned this team, since he's arrived, into a very dangerous team. And he's done it in such a short period of time. So that's my number one for my power rankings.
Okay, but is that good? Is that good for the game? What is Bettman? Does Bettman want Minnesota going all the way?
What do you mean, is that good for the game? Of course it's good for the game.
If it's Florida and Minnesota in the Stanley Cup Finals, who's going to watch? Are advertisers going to want to be involved? They don't have, like, the guy. They don't have the superstar, the marketable face. Is that good for the game of hockey if those are the two final teams? And you and I will love it. The diehards that listen to the show will probably love it. But objectively, for the business of hockey, that good for the game?
Well, I think it is. I think Minnesota, it's the state of hockey, Tim. It's ingrained in their blood. I think people love to see that type of finals, but I don't know. I've always thought that, yeah, you want the two biggest cities in the Stanley Cup Finals. And last year they lucked out, they had Montreal. So that was a get for everybody. But if you look back at the finals, there was Tampa Bay, Dallas, worse than a Minnesota Florida final in my eyes. When you got Dallas and Tampa Bay, you had St. Louis, Boston, you had Washington, Vegas, then you had Pittsburgh, Nashville. So it's not like you've had matchups that are crazy, sexy, and big markets. And I don't think it's affected the game at all. I think fans will gravitate to good teams. And there's a lot of good storylines with both of those teams. If you have a Minnesota team that just gave up Zach Parise, just gave up Ryan Suter, they got this young kid driving the boat or the plane or the car, whatever you want to call it, the bus. They're a very exciting team to watch. And you got the Florida Panthers. You got Jumbo Joe Thornton. Who's not going to want that guy to win a cup? You got Barkov, the most underrated captain in the NHL. I think that would be a very, very good Stanley Cup Finals to watch. That being said, I don't think Florida is going to make the Stanley Cup Finals, but you could interchange Florida with Carolina. You could interchange Florida. I guess Tampa Bay has a little bit of pull now, but I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. My number one is Minnesota, Tim. It's number one. My number two right now is the New York Rangers. I think the Rangers are playing great hockey. I think I don't want to butcher his name. Shesterkin's been hurt. Gorgiev, is that it?
I think it's Georgiev, but
Georgiev?
I've never heard it said out loud. I don't know.
People think I butcher these names on purpose. I don't. I honestly try to pronounce them correctly, but when I get on a roll and I get talking, and it sounds conceited and I get on a roll, when I get talking, I just can't do it. But the Rangers are playing good hockey. Have you seen, and we're jumping around quite a bit. Have you seen Jacob Trouba, what he's turned into?
Oh yeah.
Awesome. He's an absolute Terminator. What has he been drinking? Okay, the first hit, very traumatizing hit. He hit Jujhar Kara?
Sure. I don't know. Kyra? I don't know.
Kyra? I went to Michigan Tech. I should know his last name anyways. He just buried him. Absolutely devastating hit. Scary. Kara out cold. That guy's had a lot of concussion issues. I hope he's okay. He was knocked out earlier this year. It was like, whoa, man, like, let's just pump the brakes. He's back, gets knocked out again. He needs to sit out for a long, long time. The head is not something you want to. Anyways, Trouba obliterates him. The very next game, he obliterates McKinnon, cutting through the top of the circles. Trouba steps up and just lights him up. Landeskog comes in, fights him. Trouba does well in the fight. Next game, he just buries Jake Skinner. Jake Skinner gets up, hits him back. Jake Skinner gets mauled around like a little kid by the bench with the Rangers. It was really funny to watch. The very next game, he just demolishes Luke Kunin. Like, these are four Cronwall-type hits. Maybe not Cronwall. I mean, maybe a couple of them are Cronwall-type hits. Is there a scarier hitter in the NHL now than Jake Trouba? And where has he been? And this is my theory. The reason he's doing this is because he has Ryan Reeves on his lineup. And because maybe he's a little more confident. Maybe he feels like he can go out and hit a little more. Maybe I'm being crazy and I'm just overstating a tough guy's relevance and importance on a team, but maybe it is. I don't know. But why is he doing this, Tim? I don't know. It's just, I love seeing it because hitting is a dying art. And all of a sudden Jacob Trouba is just like burying guys every single game.
The Reeves thing is interesting. I didn't even think of that. That could have something to do with it. I think part of it has something to do with Adam Fox, too, where if you think back to when Trouba left Winnipeg, I think they were hoping that he would be, like, the guy on offense. He put up, in front of me, maybe 30, 40 points where you thought, in the right lineup, if he's running power play one, he can be a point per game or 50-plus anyway for a defenseman. And he never quite did that. But now with Adam Fox, lighting the world on fire, maybe he's – leaning into the other aspects of his game where Fox is putting up the point and he's free to do the other thing, which is what we're seeing right now. But the biggest question, what people are kind of arguing about, is whether or not these hits are clean, whether they're legal. And I think they are. I think that's the general consensus. But now, and I'm seeing by your face that you think it's a clean hit, right?
Well, I think all of them are clean. Yeah.
Okay. But now this is, and I agree. And these are good, clean hits. And it sucks that people get hurt, especially Kyra. I mean, that's a scary thing. But now someone on Twitter, I don't remember who brought up the point, that's like, okay, if those are clean hits and clean hits end up with guys leaving on stretchers, do we need maybe to address the definition of a clean hit somehow? Is that really a clean hit if a guys are getting hurt?
No, that's silly. No. Why?
Okay, if he's leaving on a – and maybe the Kyra thing is an exceptional play, but even McKinnon had to leave the ice on a hit that wasn't as bad. Do we need to adjust what's a clean hit or not then if guys are getting hurt in a quote-unquote clean hit?
I think we have addressed it earlier as a league where you're not allowed to target the head.
Okay, but why are they still getting hurt then Isn't it about protecting the players?
They're keeping their head down, and it's a physical game. If you run into somebody going full speed, it's a man's game. I'm not turning the NHL into a sissy game. I'm not doing it. You watch football. Football is maddening to watch now because you have a clean hit, and all of a sudden, like, it's a targeting. The 15-yard penalty is automatic first down. It's like, the guy didn't even hit his head. Hitting a defenseless receiver, this and that, 15-yard penalty. It ruins the game. If you want to play hockey, it's a man's game. I'm sorry, people don't want to hear that. Once you step over the boards, you better keep your head up. Like, that's hockey. If you don't want hitting, then just get rid of hitting. You can't all of a sudden just keep pushing the goalposts back on what is a clean hit because, that guy got hurt. Okay, you're not allowed to hit after you've taken two strides. Oh, okay. No, that guy got hurt. Now you can only hit below the shoulders. Okay, that guy got hurt. Okay, well, now you have to yell at the guy before you hit him and let him know. Oh, no, okay, that guy got hurt. Now we're going to have points on all the shoulders and you can only hit like the shoulders. That guy got hit. Okay, now you got to hit between the nipples and the belly button. That's the only spot. I think much like ads on during COVID, they put ads on the boards. I said it was a slippery slope. You give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Now we're getting ads on helmets and it's going to go to the pants and it's going to go to jerseys and it's just going to be gone. We've already given that up. This is where you have to take a stand. It's like, no, we want more hitting. Hitting is a good thing. This is why people play hockey. It's a physical sport. Just because someone gets hurt, it's a nature of the beast. Like, it's a physical game. I mean, you have to expect that when you have the puck, you got to protect yourself.
So I happen to agree. And just real quick, you mentioned football. Can I get a quick word on the Bills after losing to the Patriots and 5 days later losing to Tom Brady? You thought you were done.
Two devastating losses. First of all, Bill Belichick might be the greatest coach in all of sports, not just football. Like, that game plan was epic. Like, I would have never guessed, and I know the wind was a factor. He threw the ball three times. Mac Jones was 2 for 3 for like 18 yards. It was epic. And then going back to last night, I blame Sean McDermott. It was 4th and 2 at the end of the game, and instead of going for the win, he kicks a field goal. I'm like, go for it, man. Like, let's go. Like, what else do we have to do? We have an epic comeback here. Now we're just kicking a field goal. So Bills are in trouble. They're 7-6. Luckily, there's a 17th game. So I think if they finish up 11-6, they'll be fine. They'll make the playoffs. And that's all you need to make the dance. That's all. Doesn't matter how you got there. So, but yeah, it's just two heartbreaking losses. A, to the New England Patriots, who are our arch nemesis, and B, to Tom Brady, who we can't beat. We cannot beat Tom Brady, no matter what jersey he's wearing. It's just impossible for us, Bills. So we did not slay any demons during those games. It's and then Josh Allen's in a walking boot. It's not good. It's not good. All right, my third power ranking is the Florida Panthers. They've been playing great. All right, my bottom three. We got to move. We've been talking a lot, Tim. I was like, we're not going to have anything to talk about this episode. We've only gone through like half of the agenda. My bottom three, Buffalo, Montreal, and the Islanders. I don't know. Any other, do you have a power rankings?
I would agree with though. New York might not be in my top. I would put Anaheim ahead of them, which I know is, I wrestle whether there's enough meat on that bone, whether the Mirage is real or not, but, you have to put them up there. They're playing
funny
so
we don't
well.
Pick Washington. It's funny. We don't pick Washington, who is leading the NHL in points right now.
Well, I will say this, though. We've been relatively quiet from the Washington Capitals Twitter, who's been so, so loud and annoying. But Ovechkin only has one goal in his last 6 games.
No.
So, yeah. He's put up some assists. He's been basically still a point-per-game guy, but he's been very quiet.
No. No. So if he gets one goal every 6 games for the rest of the season, that gives him maybe 8 more goals. Just saying. I know he's going to get over 30. I concede that. But if he doesn't, oh, man, I'm taking receipts. Everybody who's tweeting at me, I know. And I'm taking receipts. And if he does finish the season with 30 or less, get ready. Because there's going to be a salty response to every single one of you jokers out there. But all right, moving on. DoorDash. I know We do the DoorDash ad a lot. And I know a lot of you are tired of hearing it, but I'm not tired of saying it. And DoorDash is not tired of paying me money to say it. So get yourself an iPhone, get yourself a smartphone, get yourself a tablet, punch up DoorDash, ding dong, DoorDash. It's fantastic. It's the best thing since sliced bread. And speaking of sliced bread, you can get sliced bread on DoorDash. Fire it up. Tell them we sent you. Promo code GlovesDD if you're in Canada. Promo code GlovesDDUS if they're in the USA. We don't advertise with people we don't like. It's a good company. I encourage you to use them. I'm sure you all do. If you're new to the show, check it out. You get 25% off. You get free delivery on your first order. It's a good thing. Promo code GlovesDD in Canada, GlovesDDUS in the US of A. It's a good company. Get some food. Everybody eats. Everybody needs to eat. Do it with DoorDash. Tell them we sent you. It's a nice way to fill your belly. All right, moving on. I want to talk about a pass. I want to talk about a play that I have never seen in my life, not even in men's league, not even in, you know, palling around, you know, before the game, not even in just an open skate, not even in an NHL practice where I'm skating with the most skilled guys on the face of the earth, day in and day out. Did you see the pass? What's Zegras's first name? Tyler or Trevor?
Trevor.
Trevor Zegras's pass to Casey or whatever Milano's first name. I'm not good with first names. I want to go with last name. The pass that Zegras made to Milano last week, where he slid the puck up on his stick from behind the net and flipped it over the net, and Milano hit it out of midair, might be one of the greatest individual efforts I've ever seen out of two guys. And I know it's weird to say, but for Zegras to pick it up and to have the patience to just float it over the net, and for it to just float perfectly over the goalie's shoulder, and for Milano to hit it out of midair and throw it in the net, it was an unbelievable play all around. I don't know why this is not getting any more hype. It should be all over ESPN. It should be all over SportsCenter. It should be all over the world because it was just such an amazing play. Maybe because it was Anaheim, nobody was watching, or it happened really late at night. I don't know. I think this is the greatest hockey play potentially of all time. Am I overstating this? It was unbelievable. Yeah.
You're not, but it was getting that attention. Like, we saw even like celebrities that don't watch hockey were chiming in on it. We saw it in ESPN and Sportsnet. I mean, obviously Twitter hockey was all over it for a couple of days. So I think it has gotten the praise, and maybe still not enough for how, you know, how creative it was. And like you said, like Milano too, like if it's the pass attempt without the goal, we've, you know, marvel at it for one night on Twitter and then that's it. Well, to finish it too, like, that was a great, great 1-2 effort. And I mean, Anaheim is just so much fun to watch. There's so much just like, I don't know, creativity and character and charisma in that group. And Zegras is kind of leading that crew. And then not to mention Troy Terry and your boy Lindstrom. Like, this is a fun team. And that was unfortunately, we have some old misers in the world of hockey, like Tortorella commenting on that. Did you see what he had to say?
No.
He was basically just like, you know, 10 years ago, if you even try a move like that, and the next time you step on the ice, someone takes your head off. And like, I wouldn't want someone on my team pulling that stuff, whatever. Just sound like old man yelling at
Cloud. Who's Twitterella? Is that an ex player?
I think he's a beat writer for the Sharks or something.
Why do people say that when they've never played the game? Hey, 10 years ago, we would have taken. No, you wouldn't. You would have been writing articles still. You wouldn't have done anything. I can say that because I played. You can't say that, Twitterella, because you never stepped on the ice. 20 years ago, old-time hockey that I never flew. Yes, it would have, because you would have been doing nothing. Maybe he's right. Maybe they would have, you know, went after him. But 10 years ago, I don't think anybody could have made that play. Maybe 10 is a little, but like 30 years ago, I don't think anybody in the NHL could have, A, had the mindset to do that, and B, been able to pull it off. That's just, kids are so skilled these days. This is what they practice day in and day out. You go for a skate with kids who are like ages 7 to 12 to 13. The hands on these kids are incredible. The toe drags, the puck skills, the stick movement. It's unbelievable the amount of skill that these kids have. Yes, the stick handling's there. What I think they sacrificed is the actual hockey knowledge and hockey skill. IQ of hockey, I think, has dropped. But the skill level has gone up. It's weird to say that, but yes, hockey IQ is plummeting. hockey skill is through the roof. So I think they're not one and the same. All right, moving on. What are we doing here, Tim?
Well, we got to get into the points back pick of the night. It's a little tricky because there's no game tonight. There was a scheduled one with Calgary, but that is canceled because we got a bunch of players, like five or six of their core guys in COVID protocol, which is not good. Obviously, it's not good for, like, you know, they happen to play the Bruins on Saturday night. So those guys all got to get tested. So there's all kinds of things to figure out. But there's a bunch of games tomorrow. So I'm gonna look a game ahead. And I'm looking at the East Coast here. The Devils and the Flyers are playing each other. Flyers super underperforming, still ahead of the Devils in the standings, still probably a better team. They're a slight favorite at minus 125. I'm going with the Devils as the underdog here. Very, very slight underdog. They're plus 105 to win. Flyers have been skidding. They put up a bunch of goals in the last couple of days. I think they had like 15 goals in three games, I think. But it's not sustainable. I like the Devils getting back in the win column here. Devils plus 105 over the Flyers.
Yeah, Flyers have been playing tough, tough hockey. Not very good. We're going to do a big trade deadline kind of recap. Who's available? Who's not? What moves are we going to make? I've already let one cat out of the bag with my Hurdle Fiala trade. But yeah, we'll touch on that maybe later this week. We're going to have Tyler Ennis on the show potentially on Wednesday, see if he can figure out his schedule. He's, you know, maybe dive into the Ottawa Senators. What's going on with the Ottawa Senators these days? But anyways, everybody, I hope you have a good day. Hope you had a good weekend. We will talk to you guys later this week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.